Scary Basement, where me and my friend Roxy have to review horror movies or die. Worst of all, we're trapped down here in this basement, wherein lurks every scary thing that has ever been, including a therapist who knows you better than you know yourself and would like to eat you, a witch who knows many accursed spells and won't let you forget it, a shark that will shut down your beachfront community's tourism season and economically devastate the small beachfront town you call home, and a deep, infinite pit. Wherein whatever falls down never comes up. You just fall and fall forever and ever. Wow, that's scary. My name's Mikey McCaller.
And I'm Roxy Polk, and man, I was so distracted by all of the other, like, horrors around here, I completely forgot we were standing next to the bottomless pit of infinite depth that nothing can ever escape from.
I think you're actually right to call it the pit of infinite depth and death.
Yeah.
The two scariest things I can think of. Speaking of depth and depth, here comes the pig bot chainsawing through the wall.
Hello, Mikey and Roxy. Listen, we've been going back and forth here for a while. I want to kill you. You tell me about a horror movie to distract me so you don't get killed. And I just want you to know, I can see through it. I know what you're doing. You guys think I'm never gonna kill you. You're just laughing at me behind my back. Ha 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 ha! Like that! Ha 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 ha! Like that! Ha 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 ha! Like that!
Oh, Pigbot.
We're not making fun of you. We're just, like, trying to... I mean, obviously we don't want to die, but we're still very afraid of you. I'm gonna be honest. I'm terrified of you.
Yeah, truly, and we'd never make fun of you like that. Who the hell even thinks to do something like that? Besides, don't you like hearing about the horror movies, buddy? Can I call you buddy?
I guess I do just fine. I would love it if you called me buddy more often.
Okay, I can do that.
But yeah, I know what you guys are doing. You make fun of me. You and Roxy, you guys are bullies.
Whoa. Hey.
Easy, easy.
That's a big word, man. I don't think that's fair.
Pigbot, I don't know how much experience you have with bullying. What if me and Roxy told you about a horror movie that is based on bullying, that is based around people who are secretly laughing at you behind your back, and then you'll see the difference between these kind of characters and me and Roxy. How does that sound?
Well, I'll give you a chance, but boy, I sure am thinking about killing you right now.
How about Carrie from 1976? That's a movie about a girl who gets bullied by absolutely horrible bullies who are basically caricatures. They'd be a great example of who's a bully, not us.
Oh, all right, I'll listen to you. One more horror movie to decide whether you live or die.
Oh my god, Mikey, do you think he's actually serious about it being the last one? That sounds kind of final.
He doesn't tend to lie. He says a lot of insane things, but they're never untrue. I think this might be our last chance. We either tell him about a horror movie and convince him that we're not bullies, or I think we're going to die.
Oh my god, okay. Then let's do it. Have you watched Carrie from 1976, Mikey?
I have seen Carrie. Thank God. Let's talk about it. We'll open up by talking about who's in the movie. Obviously, the main character of Carrie is Carrie. Carrie's a high school senior. She's not super popular. To put it mildly, she is verbally, often physically abused by her classmates. Carrie, not super popular. She got a hint of telekinetic power. She got a little bit of power to her brain.
Just a little hint.
A little.
Until it's more than that. But we also have Mrs. White, who is Carrie's mother, who is, you know what, I'm going to come out here and say it. She's a little too religious, if you ask me.
She loves Jesus the Christ, does Carrie's mom.
And sees sin in everything. It's a very healthy relationship she has with God. Preaching it to everyone who will listen.
We're also going to meet Miss Collins, who is kind of the mirror opposite of Carrie's actual mother. Miss Collins is kind of a metaphorical mother. She's a PE teacher at Carrie's school. She tries to help Carrie out. She does her best, tries to help her get a fun little date to prom. Miss Collins, we like. This is the kind of mother Carrie deserves.
Yeah, truly. And then we have Tommy Ross, who is the high school quarterback with a heart of gold. He's kind of a doofus, but yeah, he means well.
And then we have Tommy's girlfriend, Sue. She is part of the popular clique, but is not in on the bullying that Carrie goes through. She is dating Tommy. She's a nice kid, too. Also a heart of gold. We like Sue.
I will say straight up at the beginning of this, before we get into it, that, like, I didn't know they weren't in on the bad pranks that were happening until literally the end of the movie. So, the whole time I was like, they're doing a good job of just pretending like they give a shit. But, no, they actually do. We'll say this straight up so you guys know.
We'll get into it a little bit later, but there are two active parallel plots, like one by Sue and one by the popular kids, that are like going on parallel that could dovetail very easily if they were all mean. But the fact that it's two people who are both manipulating things, one for the good of Carrie, one for the bad, is a very bizarre choice.
Well, just because it's an odd thing to do to begin with, to be like, well, I feel bad for this girl, so my boyfriend should take her on a date for some reason, I guess. Like, what? It's a very strange connection and logic that I can't see any teenage girl doing. But you know what? It's a movie. It's a book. It's a roller coaster of fantasy.
Entertainment property.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, and then lastly, we have the group of popular kid bullies. We got Chris, we got John Travolta, who I never learned his actual character name, he's just John Travolta. Then we have a girl with a baseball cap, which was helpful because even to prom, she wears this baseball cap, and I would never have been able to recognize who she was without it.
If she's anything like me, it's that she's going bald and is a little embarrassed about it, so she wears a baseball cap at all times.
Hey, if that's really what's going on with her, then I cannot fault her for that, but hey, it makes it very easy to tell her apart visually, so thanks, costume director. But all of these kids are the group of teens who grow to hate Carrie and just become obsessed with tormenting her. They give up their lives for it, basically, because they have nothing better to do, I guess. Anyway.
You want to talk about, like, main character syndrome? Oh, obviously, it's going to happen in the movie Carrie, but, like, Carrie is the focus of, like, it's one of those movies where, like, it's the Poochie problem. Like, whenever Carrie's not on screen, everybody should be saying, where's Carrie?
Yep, truly.
Talk about Carrie a lot. Let's talk about the plot of this movie. Give everybody the basics of it, including the Pigbot. We open on Carrie, and she sucks at volleyball. All of her peers are taunting her. Then, after gym class, all these girls take a shower. Carrie, while she's in the shower, gets her first period, and she has no idea what it is. She's just like, why am I bleeding?
Yeah,
and she goes to her peers, and she's like, can somebody help me? And they're like, ew, fuck you. It's horrible.
It's truly traumatizing. Like, not knowing what that is and just seeing, like, blood, you think you would have nothing else to think but you're dying, you know, at that point. As she's being bullied and tortured and taunted by her peers, having tampons thrown at her while she's naked and afraid in the shower, the gym teacher, Miss Collins, comes in and slaps Carrie, which is a weird way to establish their relationship, but it snaps her out of her frenzy of fear she's in. So I guess it works. She takes Carrie to the principal, who is a dick with no brain in his head, who keeps calling her Cassie for some reason. And overall just doesn't really seem to care, sends her home. Carrie flips a dang ashtray over in response to him misnaming her multiple times. Doesn't really even notice she did it, but she did not touch it, and she runs out of the room.
Interesting. Carrie goes home, she sees her mother, and asks her mom, hey, how come you never told me about periods? I should have been warned.
It's her own body, man.
Yeah, this is going to happen. Be ready.
Yeah.
Carrie's mother tells Carrie that Carrie herself is sinful. That Carrie has to pray in the house's secret prayer closet to atone for having impure thoughts. Inside this prayer closet is a real creepy Jesus statue.
Because she, like, drags her by her hair into this place and locks her in, too. Like, it is awful. The next day, Miss Collins brings all of Carrie's tormentors together to tell them they now have athletic detention with her for next week because she's a gym teacher, I guess. And if they don't show up, guess what? They can't go to the prom, their senior prom, one of the biggest nights in a teen's life, if movies have taught me anything.
It does feel like, and this is something I'm literally just realizing, like, for me, the biggest moments of high school were, like, the day that The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker came out. Like, we're kids in the 70s. Yeah, it probably was prom.
I guess so. I feel like every movie that is taking place in high school and decides to have a prom just puts so much importance on it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, my actual high school experience was not that it was the all-consuming thing to do. Then again, we were both nerds, Mikey, so we were more concerned about Zelda Wind Waker than Bronze, I'm sure.
It's a very good game. Chris is Carrie's biggest bully, and Chris walks out on athletic detention. It's very funny when she's like, your punishment is jumping jacks.
Yeah, the scene, so we haven't talked much about, like, the lens that this camera is shot in. It's very much the male gaze in terms of, like, look at all these female bodies who are naked in the shower for, like, way too long. Now, look at all these female bodies in short shorts who are exercising and moving around for way too long. So, yeah, it's almost to, like, a comical degree in this case, too, because they're just doing jumping jacks and shit for who knows what reason. And, like, Chris tries to get them to rise up, and they're like, no, we did a bad thing. We're just going to get this over with. And, like, the teacher slaps her, too, to be like, okay, you're not going to prom.
These teachers were wiling out back
then. Like, you could just do that, like, in the 70s, I guess.
Backhanding students. So Chris is the biggest of Carrie bullies. She leaves the detention. She's not going to prom. She even goes to Sue, who is Chris's best friend, and is like, you're going to come with me, right? And Sue is like, no, we bullied a girl. Like, we're probably in the right spot. So Chris goes to her boyfriend, John Travolta, and she just rants about how much she hates Carrie. God, why is Carrie always foiling my plans?
Yeah, apparently she's got Carrie on the brain. Even as she's giving John Travolta a blowjob, she's talking about how much she hates Carrie, which was just, like, so comical. But, you know, Chris is going down a bad, dark route. But meanwhile, Sue is taking the exact opposite approach. She asks her sexy and popular boyfriend, Tommy Ross, to ask Carrie to the prom because Carrie liked his poem he made in class, even though he didn't make it, somebody else wrote it. But she sensed a little something going on there because, yeah, in that English class, Carrie, who is very, like, meek and normally doesn't speak out and tries not to be noticed, spoke up and said she liked that poem. Mm-hmm. So he does. He tries to ask her out because he's just like, sure, I'll go along with this. He's like, he's also like a goofy himbo, I guess, with no thoughts in his head. That's just like, sure, my girlfriend wants to do this, I guess. But sadly, Carrie just runs away, assuming that, yes, they must be taunting me, right? This must be a bullying happening.
It's very sad. Like, I like this idea that, like, a mature person could go and just be like, hey, why don't you ask Carrie to the prom, my boyfriend? And know that it's not about a relationship. It's like giving. It's like this gift she can give. And Tommy Ross goes along with it. He talks to Carrie. He's like, hey, you want to go out with me? And she just, like, doe-eyed stares at him and turns on her heel and sprints out the door. It's very funny.
Truly. She's like, yeah, I know what's going on here. I'm getting out. But yeah, it is kind of like a mature take on it in a way to be able to, like, look at the situation and be like, you know what? People were so horrible to her. Why don't we give her, like, a nice memory? And, like, I don't care about going to the prom, and we like each other enough that I feel secure enough that, like, you can do that and I don't mind. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, not something you really see with teenagers, I guess. Yeah, but I appreciate it. Cool.
So we have Sue and Tommy Ross, who are the light side. Back to the dark side. We got Chris, John Travolta, and Baseball Hat Girl. They sneak into a pig farm and murder one of the hogs. The plan to get back at Carrie is in motion. And we all know, is the ending of this movie just, like, one of those scenes that, like, culturally, osmosis-wise, we all just know? We all know where this is headed?
I feel like it, yeah. Like, maybe it's just because I pay attention to horror movies, but, like, I literally hadn't seen it until this watch-through, and, I still knew about that. It's such an infamous scene. It's been parodied a lot. The Simpsons scene? I guess you kind of, like, tagged as where if it's, like, if they've parodied it in Simpsons, you know it's reached cultural zeitgeist levels where everybody probably knows what it is.
Yeah. To the point where, like, I know the Simpsons bit on it better than I know the actual movie.
Yep. So Carrie and Miss Collins have a nice little chat where Miss Collins tells her she's beautiful and, you know, to, like, consider accepting Tommy Ross's invitation to prom. Why not? Miss Collins then goes to Sue and Tommy because after she hears this, she too is a little suspect. And she's like, hey, what the hell are you kids doing? You better not be being mean to her. But, you know, Tommy and Sue, they have that very mature conversation we just talked about where, like, they straight up tell the teacher, like, yeah, we just wanted her to have a nice experience. I felt bad. Mm-hmm. So, hey, the teacher knows what's going on and is fine with it.
You know what? Real quick, I wonder if this scene had been not Miss Collins going and confronting them and if it had just been Tommy and Sue talking on their own, if we would have known. Because it almost seems like they're lying to the teacher about their ill intentions. Yeah. If it had just been them, it would have been very clear that they are actually wanting to help Carrie.
Yeah, because I remember thinking, like, man, she's really stupid to just believe them. Like, that's a weird thing to do. Why would anyone think that's what's actually happening? But so it must be a lie. They must be tricking her.
I wrote exactly that down, too. And then later on, when we find out Sue actually was being nice, I was like, I guess I was stupid. I guess I was stupid for not getting it right also.
I would say it is a failure of the storytelling to make that clear. But
yep.
My first read through of it, too, was like, wait, am I the idiot? No, yeah. They are the ones who are idiots. So, okay, after they tell her that they're not being mean, the teacher's like, yeah, sure, okay, I accept this. And because Carrie hasn't accepted yet, Tommy this time actually goes to Carrie's house and asks her to prom again and says that he won't leave her doorstep until she agrees. And she's like, well, why would you even ask me? And he said, you know what? It's because you liked my poem. And there he also admits, I didn't even write it, but I thought it was very nice of you to say so. So he does come clean with her. You know, that's where I was kind of like, oh, okay. He is just kind of like a dope, but at least he's being honest with her, I suppose, in this instance. And because of that, Carrie's charmed and is convinced and says, yes, I will go to prom with you. She accepts.
Let's do it. Let's go to prom. That night when Carrie has dinner with her mother, she tells her mom, hey, you know what? I'm going to prom. And I know you're mad about it. I know you think that prom is a sin, but I'm going to prom. But her mom is just like, yo, Carrie, I'm worried you are turning into a tool of the devil. And I think that's a reasonable fear. But that's when Carrie is like, you know what? I'm opening up the telekinesis gates. I am moving everything around. I am shaking the house. And you know what, mom? I'm going to prom. Thank you very much.
Truly, she's like, okay, yeah, I know I have telekinesis and I'm going to use it for what I want, I guess. In this instance, so you better listen to me. The night of said prom, Carrie makes herself a pretty dress. She'd been working on it for a while. She made it herself. She's quite the seamstress. But her mother describes it as red for some reason, even though it's a white dress. I don't know. She doesn't like how low cut it is, even though it is quite chaste and normal. As Carrie leaves with Tommy, her mother warns, they're all gonna laugh at you! And says it in a very distinct way, a very distinct pitch that, guess what? Carrie's gonna remember that. When Carrie's gone, her mother then quotes the Bible verse about how the righteous shall not suffer a living witch, which I guess she thinks Carrie is a witch now. Not just the devil, a witch devil.
Poor Carrie's getting it on all fronts.
Truly.
At the prom, Carrie and Tommy have a truly magical time. They dance and they grow comfortable with each other. Meanwhile, the baseball hat girl is busy rigging the prom king and queen elections so that Carrie is going to win. Carrie is going to be prom queen. And Chris and John Travolta hide under the bleachers and they get ready to dump all that pig's blood on Carrie as soon as she accepts her crown.
Got a little trap. They're waiting to spring. So, Sue shows up to the prom. She's not in, like, a dress or anything because she wasn't attending with her boyfriend. Theoretically, I guess she's there to see Carrie win prom queen or something, or maybe just to, like, be there to hang out with Tommy after their date. I don't know. But when Miss Collins sees her and sees her looking at something distinct under the stairs, which Sue is trying, she sees the bully kids. She's like, uh-oh, something's going on. She doesn't know what it is. But she's trying to attempt to call them out. Unfortunately, our nice teacher lady who has been helping this whole time is like, hey, you're trying to yell at them being on stage, getting their award. You are bullying her now, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't believe you. You're doing a prank. So she locks her out of the auditorium, kicks her out. She's like, no, I'm not going to let you ruin this. Unfortunately, Sue is locked out. She was the final bastion that could have saved Carrie, maybe. And you know what? Those prank kids, they drop the pig's blood all over Carrie. Splatters her. She's completely covered in it. You know it. You've seen it. And guess what? That pail, the metal pail that had the pig's blood, it drops and hits her date in the head and kills him, which was another thing I was not clear on until a little bit later.
And also, like, to be clear, Carrie has just won prom queen. Like, she's in front of the entire school. This whole thing has been a setup. The blood drops.
She's holding flowers, right, I think? And, like, so happy.
It's a really hard scene. It's like, I am like so happy for Carrie, even though I know this other shoe is about to drop.
It goes on for so long, too. Like, this entire scene, I'm like, I know what's going to happen. I can't believe how long this scene is. Oh my God.
It's so cruel and so good that they're just like letting you revel in Carrie's happiness. Because, like, there's an edit of this movie. Like, You know how some people were, like, editing Toy Story 3 right as the toys are about to go into the fire, and then they just smash cut to the credits? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I think so. I've never seen it, but yeah, I think I've heard of people doing that.
There's a version of Carrie that just, like, smash cuts after she wins prom queen, and she's up there, and she's like, this is so great! And then it just ends, and it's the end of the movie, and it's, like, a really nice movie.
What a delightful movie that would be.
Let's talk about what actually happens. The pig blood drops, Carrie's covered in it, and she hears her mother's voice, does Carrie. She hears, they're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! Over and over, repeating. The screen actually, like, becomes this, like, kaleidoscope. Like, we're seeing Carrie's vision distort. And that's when Carrie decides, maybe not decides, maybe uncontrollably, unleashes hell upon her peers. She uses her telekinesis to control the fire hose, and she sprays them all. But then the fire hose turns on the lights, and that water combines with the electricity, the sparks rain down. Her English teacher and principal both get electrocuted. A rafter from up in the ceiling is knocked down. It swings into Mrs. Collins, just cuts her in half. The entire auditorium is set ablaze by these sparks. This is where, yeah, like you mentioned, Tommy gets hit in the head with a bucket. He's not unconscious. We never get to see him or Sue, who are the only nice teenagers that exist, ever talk Carrie out of it. They're just, like, removed from the picture. We lose all hope.
He's just killed, I think, so it's not, like, Carrie's responsibility that he died. It's, like, part of the trauma that triggered her to set off on this. Or he's unconscious and burns in the fire. Either way, he's gone, man.
He's gone.
So with all of this devastation and flames behind her, Carrie leaves prom very dramatically in her bloodstained dress and makes her way through town. We don't really get to see a lot of this, but it is implied that she causes a lot of carnage on her way to find Chris, the main bully girl, and John Travolta, whose fault all of this bullshit is. When she finds them, they see her, and guess what? They're in a car, and they try to run her over, but joke's on them, her telekinesis just pops that car, rolls it, and explodes it. Bursting into flames, they are both dead. Would have been nice if maybe they could have gotten a little more suffering like some of the others, but you know what? They're dead. I'll take it.
It really is, like, you've heard, you're not supposed to bring a knife to a gunfight. Like, don't bring a car to a telekinesis fight.
Yep, truly.
Ineffective. Back home, Carrie takes a bath to wash the blood off herself, and then she goes to her mother and asks her to hold her. This mother, though, she tells Carrie she should have killed herself the first time she and her then fiance had sex outside of marriage.
A very rational thing to do.
That's what I should have done. The first time I broke the Lord's covenant and had sex, I should have just killed myself.
But the thing is, then they get married and then they have sex, and then that's still a sin. To her anyway, which I don't understand. Isn't that supposed to absolve you of it when you're married?
No. I think because Carrie was conceived outside of wedlock. So she's
was
like,
it?
At least I should have, like, okay, I should have killed myself after I did that. But at the very least, I should have killed you. I should have killed the baby.
Wait, no. Okay. So what it was is that they had sex before and then they got married. And then she was like, oh, I don't want to sin anymore. We can't have sex. And so even after they're married, she told her husband, you need to be abstinent.
Right.
And then he got drunk and, like, sort of forced himself on her. But then she also liked it. And then they conceived her.
Yeah, you're right.
So she was like, oh, I liked the sin. So that means you're the devil. Like,
I'm happy to be wrong and then happy to be corrected. This is when, in real time, Mrs. White stabs Carrie after this horrible, like, it's such a fucked up thing for Carrie to have had this incredibly horrible experience with her peers. Then she goes home and has this incredibly horrible experience with her mother. It just feels like, it just is a real bummer.
Well, especially because her mother has been, like, acting so crazy the entire time. But it's like, finally, she just snaps. Something in her snaps where she's like, okay, I've been preaching all of this shit and doing all of this abuse. Now it's time to finally make good on it and just fucking murder my child with this knife, with a smile on my face. Literally doing the sign of the cross with the knife. It's pretty wild. The actress gives a very unhinged performance, which I think was necessary for this. Jesus.
Yeah. That's good.
So Carrie tries to flee after being stabbed because, wow, that hurts, that sucks. But her mother is chasing her. And just as Ms. White is about to stab her daughter to death, Carrie telekinesises all of the knives in the kitchen into her mother, pinning her hands to the wall and driving many more knives into her chest. Her mother is then literally crucified in the kitchen like the scary Jesus that was in the locked closet she would always put her in. Kind of a, I don't know, poignant moment saying something. I gotta say, this lady, though, when she's being stabbed, seems to enjoy it a little too much, which was interesting.
That's what I'm saying. I think this was actually a very happy ending for this mother. She got to be like Christ for a second. She got crucified just like her hero. I think that's what she was hoping for.
Something.
Carrie pulls her mother down off her cross, takes her dead mother to the prayer closet. The house is crumbling around them. We catch one last glimpse of that haunting Christ figurine in the closet as Carrie and her mother's body are swallowed up into the ground.
It's truly frightening to look at. Then we catch up with Sue. Some time has passed. She is sleeping. We learn that she has not attended any of the funerals, not even her boy Tommy's. She's just been distraught and in bed, and her mother says that she will be leaving town with her to get away from all of this. And while Sue's mother suggests that Sue, you know, she's young enough, she should be able to move on from all of this eventually, Sue has a dream sequence where she leaves flowers at Carrie's burnt down and collapsed house, only for Carrie's bloody hand to reach out of the ground and snatch her at the wrist, suggesting that maybe she won't actually get over this. Maybe that isn't the case. Or maybe Carrie isn't dead. I don't know. It was a dream. The end. That's Carrie.
Very scary. Was this the first movie where the hand reaches out from the grave? That feels like the an
surely
iconic
not.
Image.
It's got to be in other movies, too.
Oh, that's
I'm
probably
sure.
Night of the Living Dead.
I think so, maybe. That I know it's definitely in, like,
way more clear.
The poster art for Evil Dead. But I think Evil Dead was after this, I believe. I'm bad at remembering dates. Maybe it was.
We sure do have Carrie here.
Yep,
she had
we
a tough life. You mentioned very early on that, like, it's weird how male gazy this is. And
yeah.
I very much agree for the most part. But I was like, at the beginning, I was just like kind of uncomfortable with how, like, they were lingering on Carrie's body, like, in the shower.
It was incredibly uncomfortable. I did not appreciate it. I was also watching this with my Discord, and, like, me and everybody else who hadn't seen it, we were like, what is this movie? Excuse me? They were joking, like, oh, you're showing a softcore porn. I was like, no! I swear, I don't know.
I ended up kind of getting into it, because, like, I think that that was, like, this really interesting way to show this, like, purity, that this, like, this is childhood, and then the horror of it is interrupted by menstruation. Like, it did feel like we are getting the life of this very pure child, and we are about to see it completely mangled. It felt like, it does feel a little weird that
it's
like
very voyeuristic.
Is this beautiful nudity, but like I did like it as like a and I think they do it at the end too when she takes a bath. Like, it is very much about like purity and about cleansing
the
and washing yourself of this.
Is that takes away from that is we have this long drawn out like tracking shot through the locker room seeing like tits and other naked girls. Presumably, I mean, I'm sure these are like 20 or 30 somethings playing teenagers, but these are teenagers on screen as they're supposed to be written. So it's just very much like, I don't want to see this. Stop it, weirdo.
Yeah.
I felt very uncomfortable about it, and it just feels voyeuristic. And then we get to the point where you could explain it away and it could make sense. And it feels like it's detracted already from that point by the time it gets there.
Right. I think if that was the point, which it felt like it was, and I was kind of into that idea, that point is absolutely undercut by showing all of those nude teenagers before it.
Yeah. Like, and then we have really the long, not drawn out detention scene, too, where it's just like, OK, we're ogling these.
Look at these women.
I think, like, was it in Halloween 2 or something? There was, like, a genre of videos in, like, this time period that was, like, women's aerobics that would, like, be circulated and was more palatable than, like, porn or something, but was definitely, like, a stand-in to that to be, like, look at these women in tight leotards moving around. Ooh. So it definitely felt like one of those things.
The 70s were so chaste. Pretty good. Pretty good.
But yeah, that's kind of like the theming of the whole thing is just kind of about like transitioning from childhood to adulthood and a very horrible way for that to go.
Yeah.
This poor character who is just put upon and tortured and bullied as the and has that main character thing where everybody's lives revolve around her even though they hate her.
Yeah.
And then she dies. So I think for this, I don't know, maybe it's too early to get into this. I feel like there's plenty of other things to talk about too. But I was kind of left feeling like, what am I supposed to take away from this? Just that, like, bullying is bad. Don't do it. Because, like, Carrie goes through this growth where it feels like, you know, she's got gained more confidence. She's, like, kind of got her psychic powers to, like, kind of not exactly rely on, but, you know, she understands them more than she did before when she was just mm-hmm. randomly doing them. So it feels like she understands herself better in that way, too. She doesn't seem to be disillusioned that, like, Tommy loves her, has a crush on her or anything, but seems to, you know, be able to embrace the fact that she's going to the prom and being able to be like other kids and mm-hmm. wearing a dress and doing this thing that she's, like, fantasized and thought about doing. And then she's just, like, brought down by the bullying and dies.
Right.
After, like, going on a rampage that feels very justified in all honesty. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't know. How did you feel, Mikey? How did this hit you?
It is bleak. It is a definite tragedy. But I do like this idea of saying that, like, I think Carrie's death to me speaks to this idea that, like, once your childhood starts to end, it ends. Like, the moment puberty begins, this innocence is gone. And I think Carrie's passing away, being sucked up by her house, being sucked up by her mother, is about, like, she never had a chance. If Carrie is the pure embodiment of, like, a childhood innocence, it never had a chance, which is real, which is,
yeah.
you know, metaphorically yeah. how it works. We've often said this on this podcast that all horror movies are either about grief or they're about growing up. This falls firmly into category B. This is all about growing up. I will say it is very funny to me that even in, like, this dream sequence, they have written Carrie White burns in hell on her gravestone. Like,
yeah.
The kids are still mean to her after she's died. I don't know why that hit me so bad. I was just like, man, that was the last little bit of meanness I needed to click over from, like, it's too bad they're being this mean to her. Like, it's pretty funny how mean they are.
They are very much, like, the embodiment of the most exaggerated stereotypical bullies. I'm sure there's some people who are this vicious and vindictive in real life, but it's like they literally have nothing else going on aside from bullying Carrie on their minds because that's, right. like, how they're written. Which, when we kind of look at it in these more abstracted terms and, like, I do appreciate, and I think I like your interpretation of the ending to be, like, she never had a chance, and this is just about how, like, sometimes childhood ends and people don't make it out, I guess, or something to that
effect.
Not
even sometimes. Literally every time.
Yeah, yeah. To, like, kind of look at that in, like, a more abstracted, kind of, like, metaphorical sense. Like, that, mm-hmm. I feel like that's the only way I can make sense of, kind of, like, the ending to get something out of it at that point, too. So then, yeah, these bullies are kind of just a driving force towards that, right. if anything else,
they're,
more so
they
than
are embodying
characters.
The bullies are just the onslaught of time.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it is. Like, we're growing up, there's nothing we can do. Tough. I do want to say, like, again, this is another thing we've talked about on this podcast, this idea that, like, authorial intent doesn't matter so much. It's kind of what we bring. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, is the clearest evidence of it, because I think Stephen King is a horrible fucking writer. And I don't think he had a plan. I think he just does stuff and just like, and then this happens. And what would be scary here? Oh, what if there's Christ? What if the house swallowed them? What if her hand came out of the grave? Who cares? I think this is the ultimate iteration of looking for meaning where there is none. And I would argue just the fact that I have found meaning means that there is meaning. But I don't want to give Stephen King credit. I think he's an idiot.
Yeah, Mikey is going to have a fist fight with Stephen King one of these days, guys. I cannot wait to have front row seats to that fight. I think also I have heard Stephen King say that this movie is the best iteration of his Carrie story. And, like, I don't know how much it differs. There have been, like, plenty of people who have done video essays analyzing, like, the differences between both the book and the movie. You and I didn't read the book beforehand, so we can't really...
No.
Speak to any of that, but the fact that he's calling
I did it- own it as a child.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I owned this book and Cujo, and Cujo I actually read, and later in life I read The Stand, but I did own Carrie, but they're very long books, and they're cool at the beginning, but then they suck. You know what, honestly, I wish I could do with every single Stephen King book ever printed. I wish I could throw them all into this infinite pit.
Yeah, God, we're staying so close to this thing. I forgot with all the Carrie talk. That is something, though, that I think I have experienced in every single iteration of, like, a Stephen King story I've ever consumed, whether it's an adaptation or not. The potentiality at the beginning is very intriguing. There's, like, something going on. You don't know quite mm-hmm. what it is. You kind of want to know what it is. And then once it gets closer and closer to the end, it becomes more and more unsatisfying that there doesn't seem to be a plan, or just, like, something comes out of nowhere, or just, like, doesn't really... What's the word I'm looking for?
Hang together?
Yeah, it doesn't, like, make good on what was promised beforehand, mm-hmm. like, the possibilities that were promised beforehand, where it just, like, feels like such a letdown. And I kept falling for it for, like, many years, where I'd try to give his stuff, like, a shot. I'd be like, surely this time. And maybe I just haven't read the right ones. Maybe I haven't watched the right ones. Anybody listening to this, feel free to give recommendations on, like, what your favorite Stephen King adaptations are. I'm willing to give it a shot.
Listen, the answer is The Shining. The Shining rules.
I remember Pet Sematary being kind of full circle in a way. Pet Sematary might be one of the more
Pet Sematary.
Poignant ones where it is just, yeah, you don't get your child back. They come back as a demon. And now they're going to kill the rest of your family because you couldn't deal with your grief. So that actually kind of does work for me. Now that I'm talking about it, maybe there was one that worked.
Such a monkey's paw story. It's just like, wow, you think when your kid dies, you can get over it? Nope, you can't. The moral of like most Bible tales. It's just like, yeah, I know. You got to process it sometimes.
Yeah, and actually, so I do know a couple things, I guess, about like surrounding this story and King specifically. Like, this was the book that I think propelled him into pulp horror fiction icon. Because Carrie exists, Stephen King is where he is today. Like, it is such a monumental story for him specifically and pop culture and like horror culture as a whole. And it was like at a time where I think he was planning to give up on this story, and his wife told him not to. Like, she literally fished it out of the trash and was like, no, you should keep going with it. I think this is good. Also, we need to eat, okay? So just finish the thing. Which, like, I can respect that, you know? And it's kind of cool to see that he took a gamble on this story and it worked. And I think Carrie herself is, like, a very compelling character, even if there might be some issues with kind of, like, how it shakes out for her. Man, that sucks. But also, like, the character of Carrie is based on, like, two people he kind of knew from his life as a kid growing up.
Okay.
And it's kind of like an amalgamation of them. He's never going to name them because he didn't want to, like, put them on blast or anything. Like, that's not the point of it. And apparently neither of these girls made it into adulthood, really. They had some bad things happen to them. They were not very well liked either. They went through bad bullying experiences. And he talked about how, like, as a kid witnessing this bullying happening to this girl, he never stood up to help her. He didn't inflict any of the suffering on her, but he also just stood by. And so one of the things that he, like, kind of reflected on was he felt so shitty about never stepping in to help. And, like, you know, you're a kid. You don't know how to help. You know, maybe you could try, but, like, you don't have, like, the emotional maturity or life experience probably really know how to actually deal with that in an effective way. But, like, still you would carry that grief. Like, there's plenty of things that I can think of, you know, where it's like I'll think back as a kid and I was like, God, I was so stupid. I wish I did something else. And it's like, yeah, coulda, woulda, shoulda, hindsight, 2020. Kids can't really follow through on that kind of stuff. You know, you might be able to try. But
and I think that's what is kind of interesting about, like, this worldview that, like, sometimes, like, if Stephen King had known one of these young women who were bullied relentlessly and they ended up getting their life back on track and became, like, a Fortune 500 CEO, like, then all of a sudden his, like, frame of reference for how the world works, for, like, what's authentic, shifts. And he can write maybe a story where Carrie is able to defeat her mother and goes on to survive and just leaves the town forever and gets a more hopeful ending. But because the way the chips fell for this man's experience, and that's what he was observing, he was like, well, all I can do is tell my story and say that, like, when a girl is bullied this bad, her life ends. Like...
Yeah, and I think just showing how, like, the support system with her mother, too, and, like, a lot of his stories will have, you know, thoughts on religion and stuff, and just kind of how, like, it can be very darkly twisted to specific people's needs or wants or fears, depending on whatever they want. Like, these are books that people wrote and choose to interpret them however they want, and if you choose to interpret it in a very uncharitable or judgmental way, it will validate every choice that you make thereafter, no matter how heinous it is. So just like Carrie's mom being able to rationalize this horrible treatment of her is then what contributes to her being just ostracized and an outsider from society and her family, her peers. Mm-hmm. Like, she has nowhere to fit in, nowhere to even start, you know?
You're right. Like, it is this vicious cycle. Like, Carrie's so afraid of, she's being taught to fear sin. and to every and that everybody is constantly sinning, so you have to avoid people, and that makes her like put distance between people. These people then see her as weird. They're like, that Carrie girl is acting different, and so she's weird.
She's and not they allowed to, like, participate in society as a whole either, like with trends or fashion or anything. She's like wearing very old fashioned clothing. She's taught that rock music is like the devil.
Yeah. It is just like one big criticism I was going to have of this movie, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, the idea that there are two separate plans. Sue has her plan to save Carrie, and Chris has her plan to destroy Carrie. Mm-hmm. And that is a big problem I have with Stephen King a lot, is that multiple things are going on at once. The Stand both has this scientific plague, and the devil is literally walking around. Like, it's enough for just one of those things to be happening.
Yeah.
But I was kind of getting that vibe from Carrie, where it's like, you not only have these intense bullies, but you also have this mother who is dealing with you. And as we're kind of talking about it, I'm like, I can kind of see the narrative thread from, like, the mother is the unusual thing, to put it in sketch comedy terms. The mother's what's unusual here, and all of the bullying kind of flowed from that in an indirect way. The mother made Carrie super weird because she was so afraid of people, and that super weirdness made those kids bully her. And then once you get the reputation as the kid who gets bullied, you never get over it. You just are that kid.
Yeah, like, even she kind of rises above it and everything, and then, you know, brought back down again with the blood. Mm-hmm. And then you get the catharsis of, well, now everybody's gonna die.
Yeah.
Which, like, even with the teacher dying. Okay, so this was another thing, too, that, like, when I was watching it, Carrie hears that they're all gonna laugh at you, in repeating in the exact tone, and sees the entire crowd of everyone laughing, including the teacher who, like, supported her. And it wasn't, like, I thought, oh my god, so even she did betray her. So it is showing that nobody is here for you. Sometimes things just happen and people show their true colors and they're shitty. I thought that's what was happening in that scene. But then when I was watching something else talking about this movie, apparently the director was like, oh no, that's Carrie imagining it. She imagined that she was laughing at her. I was like, cool, dude, that didn't come across at all. It made the teacher look like she was evil in her final moments. I don't know what you were thinking with that. And
I would argue that that is like an effective job of putting you in Carrie's position and making you feel what Carrie feels.
Yeah.
I was getting the sense that this was all in Carrie's mind. That's what the like kaleidoscope distortion did for me. That made me feel like, okay, we are exiting reality and entering a really subjective place here. But I think like, what makes, I think the best parts of this movie are the, like, that the middle, which is pretty rare for a movie, I feel like. It's either the beginning is awesome or the end rules, and then, like, the middle is just, like, getting there. The middle of this movie is so good, like, just in the sense that, like, we get Carrie having this happiness. She gets this happy little date with Tommy, but it's always played really real. I think you put your finger on it, that, like, Carrie is never, like, thinking this guy really has a crush on me. She's just like, this guy is at best going to be my friend and we're going to have this nice time together. Like, it's all handled very maturely. I think Sue is like a really interesting and good and mature character.
Yeah, and, which doesn't get as much screen time or interaction with Carrie, which is kind of a shame. I would have liked to have seen them actually become friends, but
right.
Yeah.
And therefore, like, you know, you need Sue alive for the big ending dream sequence jump scare, but like, I think there is something really powerful about this Miss Collins moment. This idea that, like, and why ultimately from a, we talk a lot about this on this podcast as well, the idea that, like, sometimes your actions in horror movies mean you deserve to die. Like, you can't really redeem Freddy Krueger, you know? Like, sometimes the villain just needs to die. Like, the grave sin that Carrie commits is lashing out at Miss Collins as well. Like, she, the fact that she kills Miss Collins means that, like, okay, not only has Carrie had, like, you know, a bad hand dealt to her, but she's also, like, responsible. She has also committed evil. This is, like, you know, like, revenge porny to, like, yeah, fuck those evil teenagers.
Well, it's like a cycle of violence. More than anything else. Like, it's the cycle of violence showing that, like, it is really hard to break out of that. Having violence done to you, and if that's all you experience, it's kind of hard to think of anything else other than that. And, like, some people are able to break through that or, you know, be vulnerable with someone else, the right person who helps them or something. But then, yeah, like, in this case, Carrie doesn't. And, like, yeah, in that moment, like, her greatest fear is that, they are all going to laugh at me and I have no one. Not even, like, she doesn't have her mother as a support if she ever did, but she could at least, like, go to her mother and feel acceptance to some degree, even if she was just completely demonized. Her mother would let her in the house, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Right. Which it is bad, like, baseline, but, like,
yeah.
At that point, she's like, screw you, mother, I'm going to the prom. And so her mother has, like, disowned her at that point. And then mm-hmm. she goes to this prom. Her date dies, I guess. I don't know if she knows he's dead at that point. And then, yeah, everybody's laughing at her. She literally has no one. And so, yeah, that's reflected in her vision, I suppose.
Yeah. It really does, like, I am kind of liking this idea that, like, Stephen King just has a bleak worldview on these type of characters because the people he met and knew who are like this had bleak endings. So it's just like, yeah, this is just what happens when somebody's bullied this hard. They lose everything. And it's just like, it almost makes me think of, like, how different of a writer I would be if I had, like, gone to war. You know, if I had done a tour in Iraq, I'd come back and be like, yeah, it's not that people are complex and I love talking about feelings. I would be like, no, horrible things happen and sometimes your friends die and it doesn't mean anything. And you're just like, I guess. Yeah, that's sad. That's like a horrible thing. It is very interesting to me that, like, Stephen King has clearly, like, centered in on his point of view that, like, this kind of bullying, this kind of torture, this kind of abuse from parents destroys everybody. Like, nobody comes out of this unscathed. We really don't get any heroes. Even Sue, who were like, maybe she'll escape from this and have a life. No, she won't. We are told she won't. She's going to dream and feel guilt over this forever. It's just like this raising of the field that is very bleak, very tragic, and certainly like a well-articulated point of view, I guess.
I can see why it like hit people so hard when it came out too. Because in that way, it is just like, it doesn't offer you a better ending. It doesn't offer you salvation in any way or any kind of catharsis. It's just like, sometimes things really fucking suck and people are horrible to each other.
Yeah.
And I don't want every story to be like that, but, you know, if there is one here and there to kind of show that, I respect that.
I am thinking like that. It does kind of give you a little best of both worlds, right? This is a chocolate and vanilla in that we get this really bleak ending that resonates with a lot of people. Like, this is what happens in real life. Everything sucks and people die and it's horrible. But then you also get that little bit of like revenge porn again. Like, you get this little bit of like, yeah, but even if you're bullied, you get to stick it to them. Like, you get this little thrill.
Yeah, people get what they deserve.
Yeah.
But then also Carrie, unfortunately, I don't want to say gets what she deserves, but she murdered people, so I guess, you know, she did something she can't live with, I guess, so she takes herself out, I suppose.
And again, I would argue Carrie does deserve to die just for killing Miss Collins. Like, that's no good. That's no good. I think you could easily make the argument that all of her murderous actions are no good, but at least you see what, like, you know, through, It almost feels like an Expendables movie where it's like, the bad guys need to get blown away. Like, there is this through line of this movie where it's like, thank God they got John Travolta.
Yeah. I will say also there's like weird comedic parts in this movie that made me think, what is this? What am I watching? There's like a sequence where the guys are trying on their outfits and they're going to a tux store and like one of them gets ruffles. And they're like, damn, dude, you're getting ruffles? He's like, what's wrong with ruffles? I like ruffles. And then one of them's like, I think you can work it. But you over there, you can't do it, my guy. Yeah, and he's like, what? Why not? So they have like a goofy scene like that. Carrie's like making her dress and stuff. So you get like this sequence of them preparing for the prom. That is like goofy. And I remember just thinking like, what movie am I watching? It does like to switch tones in a way that I think works. But at the same time, I was like, what? Okay, that was a choice you just did. Cool. All right.
Do you remember what I don't remember the ruffles scene. Do you remember who was doing it? Were the evil bullies or was it like
Tommy? It was Tommy. It was Tommy and like two of his friends. So they were just like being goobers talking about ruffles.
Because, I could see then, like, a little, you do a little comic relief because, you want the audience to like these people. You want them, they'll make you laugh, they're kind of relatable, they're regular people. And then you're like, I'm into these guys.
Yeah, and just, like, John Travolta is not in the movie a ton. It was interesting seeing him this young, because I don't think I'd ever seen him this young in a movie before.
You never watched Welcome Back, Cotter?
No. Is he even younger than that, or, like, same age?
I'm not sure exactly, but I also haven't seen a ton of Welcome Back, Cotter. But that was a big like TV Land show back in the day.
Show. Okay. Yeah, well, just, like, I think he's even more insane, like, in the books or something, like a complete psychopath.
Oh,
which
really?
He is a pretty big psychopath in this movie, too. But, you know, they probably didn't have enough time to show that or, like, interior monologuing of how horrible he is, I suppose. But, yeah, when they go to get the pig's blood, the girl with the hat, or maybe even Chris herself, is like, we could just go to a butcher to get this. And he's like, no, I want to kill a creature to get this blood. We're here. We're doing it. I'm going to do it. And they're like, okay.
All right. All right, dude. Hey, Chris, your boyfriend, he really likes collecting a lot of blood, I've noticed. And that's just maybe something you could talk to him about.
Yeah, maybe be on the lookout for that in case he wants your blood in the future. I don't know. He might move up from animals to humans. I've heard that's a thing that happens.
You can see the path. You can see the path. This is the last thing I got to say about Carrie, and I think the reason I like the middle part of this movie so much. The middle part of this movie is just the first half of one of my favorite movies of all time, A Walk to Remember.
Oh, okay. All right.
Where Mandy Moore plays like a 17-year-old, and she's like, her father is godly, and she's like kind of the outcast. And then I can't remember the guy who plays the dude in A Walk to Remember, but he's like the popular jock, and think it's a bet, but it might not be. It might be that he just like meets
she's
her and
that.
They like, I don't think it's a she's all that. I think it is he just genuinely like starts connecting with her and they like each other and they end up falling in love. And it's very sweet. And it, again, one of my favorite movies of all time. That movie has a different ending, also bleak. Where Mandy Moore, halfway through, she reveals, she's like, the reason I don't have friendships or talk to people is because I'm very sick.
Oh, okay. I was like, I thought I remembered she had cancer or something, right? Yeah. It was a different movie, but nope. Okay, that was that movie.
And they end up getting married when they're both like 17, and she passes away a couple weeks later, and it's just like this very sweet, hopeful little thing.
Oh,
but
man,
it's one of the best movies. And halfway through Carrie, I'm like, this is just A Walk to Remember, which is nice. It reminded me of a movie I like a lot.
Really?
Two sides of the same coin, really. We're definitely going to talk about what we think is the opposite of Carrie. I would say that, like, A Walk to Remember is the Two-Face to Carrie's Harvey Dent. They're just, like, they're two parts of the same story.
The bright mirror of this, I suppose, even though it sounds very depressing as well, but in a different way.
Yeah, it's very nice. Did you have anything else you needed to say about Carrie? Oh, real quick, I did like that when Sue goes to the house, the Carrie house at the very end, there's a for sale sign up just in front of the pit, as though somebody's like gonna go and be like, yeah, I'll take the burnt pit where Jesus exacted his wrath.
Yeah, it's like in the shape of a like cross. And then that's what is written, like, Carrie White burns in hell or something over it. Yeah, man. One funny thing I did want to call out before we leave is there's a scene where the mom's chopping a carrot as she's debating chopping up her daughter, and it is just shot in a very funny way where, like, you hear the chopping going on, she chops the carrot, and then later you just see her chopping the chopping block, there's no more carrot there, she's lost it. What's gonna go under the knife next? Dun dun dun.
That's cool.
But it's just so funny, and, like, they didn't have to include it. I understand she's a murdering psychopath at this point, but I appreciate the attention to detail and being very clear about it, I guess.
That's some good show, don't tell.
Uh-huh.
Roxy, did you have a question for me?
I sure do. So there's a lot of importance placed on this prom, Mikey. This whole prom scene is the culmination of the entire movie, even. So I want to know, what was your prom like?
Very sad.
Oh?
I was very sad. So I, in high school, like, didn't think I was gonna go to the prom. I was not the kind of guy. I had, like, one girlfriend throughout high school. And just for, like, a very short time, I was like, I don't really date. That's not really my thing. I don't go to prom. But me and my best friend had an art class, like a painting class, with these two girls who were twin sisters.
Oh, okay.
Both very cute, but unclear if they were cute because they were twin sisters and that was just like the novelty, or because they were actually cute. I think they were actually cute. But I had the biggest crush on one of them. And we sat across from these two twin girls. They were, like, you know, kind of friends. Mm-hmm. And because in high school, I was certainly not capable of just being like, hey, I like you. Would you like to go on a date or would you like to go to prom with me? I was, like, kind of couching it in a joke. Like, wouldn't it be funny if, like, we went to prom together? Like, what? Can you imagine? And I just remember
oh, no.
the girl who I had a crush on was just like, yeah, what if we did? What would happen? I was like, we'd go and have a great time. And she's like, huh, okay, interesting. And she didn't have a date, so we ended up going to prom together.
Oh.
And so we merged all of our groups. And so these two twins had, like, their group of, like, 10 friends. And my friend came with his girlfriend.
Okay.
Just, like, the three of us, like, glommed on. And so I went to prom with a bunch of people who, like, I knew but wasn't super good friends with. But I had the biggest crush on this girl I was going with. And mm-hmm. she did not have the biggest crush on me.
Oh,
and
no.
So we go to prom together.
Did she like someone else or just wasn't into you?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, that's at least a little bit better. So it's not like you're a substitute or something. But still, that sucks when it's someone
she
you like.
She ended up, of the group that we all went with, she ended up hanging out with her best friend, who was this girl who I just remember being very tall. This very tall girl. And they danced a lot. And I remember, like, we danced a little bit at the prom, and at one point the DJ's like, all right, fellas, give your girl a little kiss. And I gave my date a kiss on the cheek, and she just went, blech.
Oh,
no. Like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Felt very
oh, no.
sad. And then me and my buddy who had come to the prom with us, we had all, like, chipped in on a hot tub for, like, the after party and uh-huh. for food and stuff. And then afterwards, I was so sad. I was like, I don't want to go. I'm just going to head home. And I did. And I went home. And it was very sad.
Oh, no, Mikey. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was a tough one.
Man.
Oh, bad well, times. What was your prom like?
So mine was a lot less eventful, I'd say.
Uh-huh.
I transferred schools, like, my senior year. So, like, I had friends from, like, 3 years at that one school. Some of them transferred with me to the new school.
So you were new kids together?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of us were, basically. They're especially, like, the senior class of a newly built school. Like, they're all right. going to come from somewhere else.
Oh, got it. Okay.
I didn't even end up going to my actual school's prom. I went to my old school's prom because I uh-huh. had my other friends who were there, too. And, like, they were more invested. Like, I had one of those friends who was, like, super type A, I'm going to plan everything. I'm mm-hmm. going to make a scrapbook about it. And I'm going to be really annoying and make you join in on it.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay, sure, I'll go to this. Like, I betcha if she hadn't been that insistent about it, I probably never would have even gone to prom and
sure.
probably wouldn't have even noticed it.
Uh-huh.
But we did. So there's like a group of five of us girls. We dressed up in like poofy dresses and stuff just for fun, took like photos mm-hmm. together, went to the prom. I don't even know if any of us danced. We kind of just like sat around and talked and hung out. And like, I remember having fun listening
fun.
To music and stuff. And then like after that, when that was over, we went bowling in our giant dresses, which was fun and kind of funny. And then after that, we went to go like get pancakes at IHOP, which I think was like one of the first times I'd ever like done that, to like go to a late night restaurant with my friends,
sure.
like in high school, just because like, I don't know why I hadn't done it before.
Wow, that's fun.
But so that was just kind of neat, got some pancakes and stuff. I wasn't really emotionally invested. There wasn't anyone I liked. I actually had an incident where there was like a dude I liked for most of my high school time.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a girlfriend the whole time. And then there was a brief period where he broke up with her and it seemed like we were going to go out. And then he just ended up going out with some hot transfer student from like Europe or something.
Died.
I mean, if he would have died, probably would have saved my heart more. But we were hanging out. It seemed like we were vibing. I was like, finally, okay, I'm going to confess to him. And because he went to the other school that I didn't go to anymore.
Oh, sure.
There was like some exchange student. I think she was maybe from France or something or whatever. Much hotter than me, I can say objectively. Don't know much about her personality, but he was like, oh yeah, I'm going out with that girl now. And I was like, you just met her. What the fuck? Okay. I don't care anymore. Fine. I never had any delusions that, like, maybe we go to prom or something, but I thought, like, maybe we date sometime. Maybe.
Uh-huh.
But so I was kind of, like, over it by then. I had made my peace with it, just being like, that was, like, the only guy I was interested in, and he doesn't give a shit about me, so that's fine.
So you were over it.
Yeah. I'm just going to hang out with my friends, and we're going to eat pancakes and go bowling. I don't care. Well, I do care. That was fun.
That's
that
so much fun. Better to, like, have a low stakes, like, this prom is going to be us hanging out together, me and my friends, getting together, having a great time. It's so much easier as opposed to like, this is going to be the greatest night of your life. You're going to go with somebody you love and you're going to kiss. Like, you're not. I wasn't. I sure wasn't.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there is a lot of merit to putting it all on the line for something like that. Like, I never really had any of those kind of, like, movie-worthy experiences in high school people talk about. I was a lot more, like, low-key or whatever. Which, I think is fine. I don't really regret it or anything. But sometimes I think about, like, yeah, I don't have a lot of these shared experiences that people talk about, but that's okay.
You were like a real person.
Oh, look at me. A real person.
I was over here fucking having Dawson's Creek.
No. You're just like, no, I'm just a regular. No, Mikey, human. There's nothing wrong with it. I think that's good. That's the time in your life when you can be like that. And so I am just kind of like, man. I suppose for a minute I sort of did with that one guy I was into. Didn't end up panning out, that's unfortunately, true. But that's life.
You had a hint of Dawson.
I didn't get sucked into the ground with my religious zealot mother who tried to kill me. So, you know what? Hey. I think we both turned out pretty okay, Mikey.
Roxy, you haven't gotten sucked into the ground by your religious zealot mother yet.
That's true. In an alternate universe, luckily my mother now is not a religious zealot of any kind. It's the sweetest woman on the planet. But what if she had been Carrie White's mother, which I don't remember her name.
Roxy, we gotta rate this movie on a scale from 1 to 5 thumbs. Remember, here in the Scary Basement, we've got our own 2 thumbs, and we got a big box of hands, so if we need extra thumbs, we got extra hands. How would you rate the movie Carrie on a scale of 1 to 5 thumbs?
So a lot of these are like on preference alone. I know a lot of people really like this movie. For me, I'm giving it 3 thumbs, so 2 of my own and another one.
Okay.
Which for me is kind of generous because, like, I didn't hate this movie, but I didn't necessarily enjoy my time with it and I wouldn't want to watch it again. Once was enough for me. Now I know what the original Carrie movie is like. But, you know, I can appreciate how much of a landmark movie this was. And, like, for all the reasons we talked about for, like, what, the last hour or so? Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it was. There's a lot to dig into. It's touching on a lot of, like, very universal themes about, like, childhood and growing up that I think are pretty solid. But yeah, kind of like with the ending, I think if you didn't have your take on it, I would have just been like, yeah, that's just sometimes life is bleak. And I was kind of like, yeah, I don't know if that was worth an entire movie to say that. I get that already.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
It's funny when a movie has to tell you what you know. Like, sometimes you don't get what you want. I'm like, yeah, I know. I didn't get a Nintendo 64 for Christmas in 1999. I get it.
Yeah, it's like everybody's entire life, man. unless you're super rich or something, maybe. But yeah, I think there's things to appreciate, but I think it's also very flawed. Overall, I'm glad it's a movie that exists, but I don't feel a need to watch it again. So 3 thumbs for me. What about you, Mikey? How do you feel?
I'm close. I gave it a 4.
Okay.
I love huge swaths of this movie. I love the middle, as I've said before. I think there is a really interesting feeling that this movie gives me, the same way that, like, a film noir gives me. Like, you see a lot of film noirs open with, like, the detective floating face down in the pool, and it's like, I bet you're wondering how I got here. Well, let me tell you the story of how I drowned in this pool. And then we see the story, and it's just like, no matter what happens, we have this looming sense of dread that Carrie, I think, is really good. Even if I didn't know what was going to happen at the end, like, you know, these bullies are planning something, you know, they're murdering hogs for it, you know, something is about to drop. And it is like a really well-crafted movie in that sense. Like, the tension is good. The characters are well-developed. And I love Carrie. I think Carrie's like an all-time great character. I'm rooting for her. Too. I think she did nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. I am on board with Carrie. No, she obviously did something wrong. She murdered her teacher. But here's the thing. I think I like this movie better without telekinesis. I think telekinesis is just another thing thrown on top of here that we don't really need. Like, she can just be a tortured teen. And, like, if she brings a flamethrower, like, if she lights the school on fire, is it that different of a movie? If she grabs the hose herself and sprays the sparks, like, is it that different of a movie? Did we also need this stupid supernatural thing on top of it? A religious mother leading to a child being abused for her whole life and then therefore being abused in school is enough. Settle down, Stephen King. 4 thumbs up.
Heard it here, folks. Mikey hates magic.
Honestly, yeah. Like, if a movie has magic, it should be about magic. This is the exact same movie, I would argue, without the magic. And therefore, do magic.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. Roxy, we got to get the taste of Carrie out of our mouth. We got to wipe the palate clean. Can you give me a movie recommendation, a book recommendation, a TV show recommendation, a video game recommendation that you would consider to be the exact opposite of the movie Carrie?
So recently, there was a Final Fantasy 14 fan festival event that happened in London. So nowhere near me. It's in London. I've just been watching the streams and then talking about it with other folks online. They're like these 9-hour streams for each day. And since it's already happened, I can like scan through and just watch the parts I'm interested in. Like they have some really cool panels. The director and producer of the game showed up in costume for the new class they're announcing, and it looked cool. Costume design was spot on. the weapon even transforms. It was very cool. All that is to say is that it was a bunch of people who were super happy and jazzed to be there, all supporting one another. It's also on a stage where everyone is being nice and supporting one another. The like founder of Final Fantasy, Hironobu Sakaguchi, showed up talking to like the director now, who's like Yoshi P, which is, it's kind of like a passing of the torch for the franchise in a way, where it's like, hey, my video game grandpa and my video game dad are talking about like the progression of this franchise and their time with it and how it was at the beginning and how it is now. It was very cool to see them interacting, and then they're eventually going to play a game together, and the video game grandpa is going to troll my video game dad, and it's gonna be very funny. I'm gonna be looking forward to day two coverage, but basically everybody has nice intentions and they're treating each other well, which is the exact opposite of Carrie's experience being on stage. So
you're right, even just like this idea of like passing the torch, the idea that Chris could have been like, it's time for Carrie to be the most popular girl.
Yeah,
it's time for her to take over my life's work, which is blowing John Travolta.
Truly. What is your palate cleanser recommendation, Mikey?
So I would argue that Carrie had a pretty bad teenage experience.
Oh, yeah. It was, I'd say you'd be correct in arguing that.
A movie I just saw that is a very positive teenage experience. Roxy, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
Oh?
Is the most recent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. It came out just this summer.
Oh, damn. Okay.
It's animated in that, like, across the Spider-Verse kind of, like, overly stylized, sketchy, low frames per second sort of animation style.
That seems and neat.
It's incredible. It is the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles story I can remember. I'm sure they have done this in the past, but certainly like in my head, it's all just like, yeah, they're just four dudes who run around and fight ninjas. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, it's emphasis on the teenagers. The Ninja Turtles in this movie are true-ass teenagers. They're just talking, they're like watching movies, they're watching YouTube. It's like a big sleepover for them.
Okay.
They are just like, they're talking like teenagers. Michelangelo, or maybe it's Donatello, one of them has braces.
What?
They are just teenagers in a way that is very satisfying and very sweet. The mutant mayhem, as it were, it's like all of the weirdo mutants from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles canon all together, like, come back and meet them, and they hang out. Like, most of the movie is hanging out.
Okay, it's just, interesting.
It's very fun. They just, like, have a lot of affection for, like, teenage culture. They just want to, like, their whole goal throughout the movie, the Ninja Turtles' goal, is to go to school.
Okay.
They're just like, wouldn't it be cool if we could go to school? It's so much fun. It's very funny, and it's very, like, it's, like, a great story, and it's one of those kind of new wave superhero movies where, and I can't think of any other example, so I guess it's not a new wave, where, like, the villain of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, has a very clear reason. He is not a villain. Like, he's the antagonist, but it's just, like, his reason for doing what he's doing is very understandable. It just happens to be in opposition to the Ninja Turtles. The way that they, like, go about solving their problem, like, they obviously have the big superhero end of movie set piece, but like they kind of just talk it out in a way that's like really satisfying.
Okay.
Or at least with most of the villains. There's one villain who goes too far, but like, yeah, it's just a really great movie. It's all very fun. They all like each other. Even Raphael is like kind of more a hothead than the like I feel like in a lot of Ninja Turtles movies, Raphael tries to murder Leonardo.
What? Like, okay, I don't know a lot
they
about
end up, like they always end up like sword fighting
Ninja Turtles, so I just have, like, kind of basic cultural osmosis knowledge of Ninja Turtles. I don't know if I've ever seen an actual movie. There have probably been times where I've watched, like, an episode of a cartoon show.
That sounds right.
I barely remember.
Yeah, that's
remember
probably enough,
it.
Honestly.
But yeah, so like one of the Ninja Turtles is kind of like hates the other one or something?
Well, Raphael is such like, he's like a brooding Batman, and Michelangelo obviously is like a, you know, a poppy sunshine, want to hang out. But Leonardo's just like, here's the right thing. And Raphael's like, the right thing is stupid. We're going to get killed if we do it your way. And they maybe not end up trying to murder each other, but they certainly fight a lot in like a way that like they're really fighting and it's really about like the future of the group. In this one, they're just like, Raph, we know you're angry. Time to let that anger loose on these bad guys. And he's like, yeah. And they just okay, have fun with fun. It. Everything is so much fun. Can't recommend it enough. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. You gotta check it out, Rox. Well, Pigbot, now that you've heard us talk about Carrie, do you feel a little better?
Oh, I absolutely do. I feel a lot better. In fact, I've learned a valuable lesson.
Oh, was it to not bully people? Was it to maybe, like, let people live their lives as they want to?
Or, you know, to, like, accept love and care from people who support you, I guess? Like the teacher and stuff?
No, it's to kill people with my psychic powers!
You have psychic powers?
Yeah! I have psychic powers! I've had them all along!
It feels like my brain is going to explode!
Oh, God. This is it, Roxy. It all comes down to this. We have to stop the Pigbot.
But how?
I'm gonna push him into the infinite pit.
But what if he pulls you in with him?
He won't. Oh God, he pulled me in with him, exactly like what you said, Roxy!
Oh my God, this can't be happening. Mikey, I can't see him. It's the inescapable pit where you just fall forever. Nothing survives that. Oh my God. Mikey's actually gone. He's dead. What am I supposed to do now?
Oh, don't worry, Roxy. I'm back. Close one. I grabbed a branch as I was falling in the infinite pit. So, the Pigbot is dead, but I'm not.
Oh my God, Mikey, I had no idea what I was going to do up here without you if you died like that.
I wouldn't worry about it, Roxy. I'm not going anywhere for a long time. Hey, did you hang that piano from the ceiling?
Oh my God, he really is dead now! I just saw it! He was smushed in front of me! It was so violent! I guess it's time now for haunted plugs? Scary Basement is on Twitter at @scary_basement. Scary Basement is also on Instagram at @scarybasementpod. Scary Basement is on YouTube also at youtube.com/@scarybasementpod. I am on Twitter, Twitch, and Blue Sky as Red Mage Roxy. Mikey is, or was, on Twitter, Twitch, and Blue Sky as Secret Blimp. Because, you know, who keeps a blimp secret, right? That's the kind of jokes you used to say. Anyway, leave us a 5-star review. Tell your pals. It really helps us out. Check out our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/supermpcradio. There's a lot of podcasts over there that you can enjoy that me and Mikey used to do. Anyway, I suppose now all that's left is to make a grave full of puzzles like he wanted, and like I am contractually obligated to do in his will.